They call it a mine. It's not a mine, it's a podcast known as
Trapped Under Plastic. The only podcast that teaches you to paint a dragon, pulling a wagon, full of flagons, to Oregon. Wait, was it supposed to be Oregon?
I don't think there's any way to pronounce Oregon that would that would rhyme with flagon.
Flagon, yeah. I thought this fun little nursery rhyme was teaching me how to pronounce Oregon the right way, but neither way rhymes.
Dragon, Oregon.
Flagon,
Oregon.
Maybe we're the stupid ones.
The problem is the prior three words are all two syllables.
Yeah.
So it's dragon, flagon, wagon, Oregon. You add a third syllable.
It's hard when you do that. God.
Next time, write it in where they're all three syllable words that end in gun.
Yeah. The next time we use that intro in 2050 when we're 70-year-old grandpas making this podcast still.
We're just going to forget what the topic was halfway through the topic.
Yeah, by then, like there will be like electronic cables that like go into like our brain and we don't have to say anything. And we just like think it and it gets recorded in super high fidelity.
For a second, I was like, man, that would be terrible because my brain thinks of really terrible things.
Yeah.
But then in this podcast, we say most of those things.
Yeah.
I mean, the things we don't say are probably the most terrible. So,
yeah, there'd probably be some kind of political measure that would like prevent your id from leaking out into like the world because then like you could get like in prison for that. And like privacy is important in the future.
Yeah. Your social credit score will go down.
Yeah.
You won't be able to ride the bus.
You out of the bus, not the future bus.
All right, we're going to do this. We're going to hit this up. So we got this smell and salts that I read that over time these lose their potency quite a bit.
I'd like to.
So we're going to find out how much they've lost their potency. Really hope I don't cough the whole episode.
I'd like to inform the good PBs that he just said we, and I have never said that I'm doing this. John is such an enabler. He's like, do you want to do it? I'm like, I don't know.
It's not math.
That's the best excuse. Yeah, I'm not doing it. You fuck you. I told him I would do it based on how he reacted, and he was like, I'm gonna hide my reaction, and he couldn't hide shit. He just ate it.
Okay, they
did
lied.
It get weaker.
It did not get weaker. It did not get weaker. Okay, it's a little bit weaker. I didn't go, my brain didn't make that like like reset sound.
No.
But holy shit, it felt like
it was different this time.
It was different. It felt more like when you're in a chlorine swimming pool as a kid.
Yeah.
If you were just to like go underwater blah, 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 and then just snort, inhale as much as you can, and the chlorine just stings your brain. You ever like accidentally like snort stuff water in when you were a kid in the pool? That's what that feels like.
Yeah, probably something like that.
You want to feel it again?
No, I fucking don't.
Man, I'm fucking ready now. I'm crying. I'm ready for this podcast.
Everyone says start podcast crying.
Yeah.
That's the biggest move. All right. On to the preamble ramble, which we still haven't started yet. I played, finally, my first 2,000-point games of... Our 2,000-point game of Age of Sigmar for this current GHB, I think. Played it yesterday against Curtis's Marathi and his Witch Elves.
Witch!
You know what I didn't realize about Marathi is that she's a tank.
She is a machine.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, she can take it.
Honestly, I don't know if my army is just so fucking broken that everything else seems not that amazing in comparison, but... The tiny little Marathi roped up my Vampire Lord on Diamond Dragon for 4 combats. And I was just like, because I can't kill you. I have to just sit here. I'm not going to run away from you and have you chase me down. I have to sit here and just kill this model 3 wounds at a time.
She can't run very fast, though, can she?
She can't, but I feel like the big mama one would then catch me or something like that. It's like a tar pit unit. Maybe I could have got away, but I don't want to waste a turn retreating, you know?
Yeah, because then you can't even shoot your breath.
I know, yeah.
Like, if you could jump away and then still shoot a breath, you'd still be okay if you're like, I've gotten far enough away. But yeah, it's frustrating. She's definitely a, like, you don't get her stuck in with your big dong, you know?
Yeah, no, you do not.
Yeah, you put your bunch of little dongs around her.
Right. Like my werewolves?
Yeah, your werewolf dongs.
I would run those furry dongs at Neharada. But yeah, that was actually one of the things I learned in the game, is that I would have avoided her at all costs and like just send a bunch of like my chaffy units at them, or avoided the ones that aren't as fast.
You find that weird feeling in Age of Sigmar where like when you're playing an army or playing against a certain model or unit or whatever, and it takes you a full game to understand like how to best deal with them strategically.
Yeah.
And then you're like, fuck, I gotta play this full 3-hour game, and in the first 15 minutes I realize I made a pretty dumb error.
Yep.
Maybe that's part of the fun and strategy of learning the game and being better as a player, though.
Yeah, for sure it is. I mean, that is absolutely a thing that I love in games, that positive feedback loop where you feel like you're getting better and mastering the game like more and more every time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's the worst thing in the world to put effort into a game and see like no return. I think it's actually, I mean, I talk about Dota a lot, but I really don't play a lot of Dota. I would watch a ton of it,
mm-hmm.
but like I have played MOBAs for like, I don't know, like easily over a decade, and I still suck at them. And so maybe the lack of a positive feedback loop is why I don't play much MOBAs, because I, you know, it doesn't really matter how I perform. I'm just going to stay in my shitty rank. But yeah, so having that is very important for you to be encouraged to play more and more.
I think there's probably a parallel between something like that and a game like Age of Sigmar too, where it also comes down to just the sheer amount of consistency of repetitions too.
Absolutely, yeah. That's very true.
Yeah. And like, because the meta of Dota changes and evolves over time, and new heroes shake things up and all that kind of stuff. So you kind of, even if you are technically pretty adept at the game, you still need to get in your reps. In Age of Sigmar, there's those constant tweaks to the armies, new additions, new books, new what do they call the battle? General's Handbook? That's mm-hmm. the thing. Mm-hmm. Which is, there's another one coming out. Spoiler to the news section.
But this one is at least a year long. Anyways, we're going to get into that.
God. I know. I don't hardly even... I haven't even used the current one I bought.
Yeah.
I opened it and I read through it, so I feel pretty confident about it, but I haven't got to play a game yet.
I played like six games, five or no, not six, not, no way, maybe like four or five, something like
probably,
that.
Probably like six games.
Probably like 35.
I'm a clam man.
Are you?
I mostly eat clams.
That's your whole diet? People are going to like check their podcast and be like, did I skip to a different part of the podcast? Why the fuck did John just say that?
Smell insults. They got lingering.
Oh, they're lingering.
So when you said prolly,
lingonberry,
I thought of that meme video of the little kid at the theme park where he's like, prolly, like, it was probably pretty much like the best day of my life.
This recess therapy.
And then I went to, my brain went to another clip of that little kid where there's this adult guy that goes around and asks little kids questions. And this kid, he's like, I'm a clam man. I mostly eat clams.
Yeah.
So that's the insight to what my brain does. All right. My first thing, I got a present for you.
Oh,
so I went to, was it last weekend? 2 weekends ago?
TMX.
2 weekends ago? I went, RRRTMX, what you really want? You're not a DMX fan?
I mean, I am a DMX fan, but only insofar as the songs that I know.
We'll spend a little bit of time on this preamble ramble talking about TMX, because it was bananas fun in a really different way than Adepticon, because Adepticon is just like sensory overload, yeah. Always people, always high energy, always so much to do. And this was like way more chill, way more just hang out, way more just like try out whatever random game or talk to whoever people. And we taught classes. So TMX is Tabletop Minions Expo, takes place in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, at the beginning of each summer. Put on by Uncle Adam, of course, Tabletop Minions Expo. If he wasn't there, it'd be awkward. And this is the first year we taught painting classes. And so Sam Lenz, Vincey V, and myself each taught 2 one-hour classes. And I got to tell you, dude, one-hour classes are fucking fun. They're so fun to teach. They're so, like, the class is just like, if I fuck them up, they're gone in an hour. No, but like, why it's so cool is you just drill down and you focus on one thing because that's all you can do, but you really can hammer home the intricacies and the instant feedback and the no, do exactly this, or here's what you're doing, or getting feedback because it's only usually a few steps and you're just focusing on one thing. You don't feel rushed to go to the next thing. You're always cognizant of your time, you know, 1 hour. And I think if I could teach probably the same classes in an hour and a half and maybe even 2 hours and just spend a little bit more time going a little bit more depth or whatever. But it's really good. And you also don't overwhelm your students with just a barrage of things.
I love doing that.
They inevitably remember none of it.
Yeah.
Here, you know, you'd be like, here's what we're doing today. You know, there is one or two key points to this whole process to make it work. I'm going to drill those into you, and you're going to leave, even if you can't execute 100%, you're going to leave feeling confident in being able to improve on it. Even one of the guys, Joe, there's a lot of characters that came out to these classes, dude. Joe was there, older gentleman. I think he's in his mid to late 60s, and he just had stories. He just like always had things to say. And he went back to the Facebook group, and he has posted, I think, 3 or 4 times on the Facebook group because he took my Painting Faces class and painting Space Marine heads. And he's painted like 6, 7, 8 more heads since that class and nice. Posting them and showing like his little improvements.
Nice.
It's like, Joe, like, you know, the end is near. You got to get these faces done, man.
Wait, so they're not complete faces?
Oh, they're done. Yeah, they're done. No, the end is near, meaning he's old. He's going to die soon.
Oh, shit.
I mean, Joe, I hope you don't die soon. You seemed healthy. You're full of energy. You looked like you would probably do some smelling salts with me. But we had a great time. Stayed overnight at Sam's house. We had fucking sleepover every night. And it was, yeah, me, Sam, and Vincey, we just hung out, and we sat, and we watched videos, and we joked around, and we talked about Leviathan, got to see all of Sam's painted Tyranids, got me thinking about my Tyranid scheme, just laughed and laughed, ate some burgers. It was a great time, really.
Sam doing the cooking of the burgers?
Yeah, I showed up. Vince had got in a little bit earlier on his plane, and Sam already had the grill going on the front porch when I pulled up.
The fuck, dude.
Great. So walked jealous. To CVS for some drinks later.
Nice.
Got some sparkling ice, as one does.
Is there liquor at CVS?
Yeah, in Wisconsin, dude.
That's nice.
I didn't buy Fireball.
You didn't?
I didn't buy Fireball.
Did you buy vodka?
I didn't buy I didn't buy anything. I brought, because I stopped at a Quick Trip on the way, and I brought just some beers.
Oh.
I just brought a 6-pack of beers, and that's all I drank all weekend. Okay. Other than one of the students gave me a 6-pack of bigger Fireballs. So we drank those. And then
fucking skis.
And then one of my other students brought a whole bottle of Fireball, so he did shots in the paint water glasses.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it was a great time. So anyway,
All that to say,
Majestic 13 launched at TMX, which is Snarling Badger Studios' third game release, a miniature agnostic game that is brought to us by Vincey V and Uncle Adam, and I'm doing a terrible job of selling this, but this is a kind of current day game, and
maybe current day, maybe near future.
Yeah, near future, give or take. It deals with like real world history of a alien touchdown in the 1940s. This is prior to Roswell. Which I actually knew about this because I've listened to some alien stuff sometimes. And and it's like kind of like a what if. Like, what if those aliens, and there were like, they actually recovered an alien body and there was supposedly one that was alive, whatever. So it's what if those aliens, the standard like big-headed, you know, scrawny little body aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
What if they were escaping an attack on another alien race and they're here that came to tell us, to warn us, and to give us a little bit of technology to prepare us. And the Majestic 13 are the 13 large organizations or groups in power in the world that have a hand in deciding how we're going to defend ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so you pick one of the Majestic 13 as your faction, and you get all these cool things. And it is a Monster Hunter style game where it is a unit of your five dudes typically going against one big, nasty, scary alien as they've touched down. It is a solo game or a cooperative game, and you play a whole campaign. So I'm bringing this back for you, which is signed.
Nice.
By Vincey V and Uncle.
Yo, your guys' games keep getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah, they were talking about that. This is 141 pages. But they're like, this one is a little bit bigger. It's actually probably noticeably bigger than the very first one, Rain in Hell.
Yes,
probably about almost double the size of that.
Yeah, that one is smaller than both of them.
But this one is something like 30 or 40 pages bigger than the last game, but they're like, they're not going to keep growing.
No? Okay.
I
want Warhammer Fantasy Battle levels of tome, Vince. Oh,
Jesus. And then most importantly, on the inside,
yep.
Thanks to the playtesters and those who provided feedback, I signed it for you, too.
Oh, thank you.
That's a book for you.
Thank you. Oh, yes. Hold on. Hold on. Yeah, baby. There's my fucking name. Woo.
Yeah, so you should probably sign mine at some point, too. I didn't get Sam's signature because he's on there, too.
That's cool. All right.
Collect them all.
Thank you so much for the gift. I appreciate it. And also, I appreciate you, Vince and Adam. Because you probably gave it to John.
Yeah, I did. I didn't buy that. They gave it to me to give to you. And they had two things for me to tell you as I gave it to you. One, your butt stinks.
Okay.
And
it's true.
Two, they'd like you to come to TMX sometime.
Okay. I think that we can make that happen just because it is so close by.
Can't do much about the stinky butt.
No. Bathing, no.
Yeah. So that's
also, I think you should change all your profiles to say, John Ninas, I watch alien stuff sometimes.
That's a pretty sweet merch shirt.
Yeah.
It's just my face and it says, I watch alien stuff sometimes.
Yeah. I think that'd be great. That'd be so great.
Oh, goddamn. Okay. If any artists out there that or listening to the podcast, your graphic designer hit me up with that logo.
Just like super low quality.
Yeah.
Comic Sans font. Daryl face. I'll watch alien stuff sometimes. All right. Any more preamble ramble?
I got something else real quick, but also there'll be links down to Majestic 13 in the show notes and in the video description if you want to check out the game. Pretty cool. You can get it pretty cheap too. They're pretty nice because they do print on demand through their printer, so support those guys. They're good people and the game is really fucking fun. Trust us, we tested it. Okay, two other real quick things. First of all, I finally got around. Last Sunday, I spent most of the day, my daughter and I, and then some on Monday night, putting in my built-in shelving wall in my studio. I'll show you the picture, and I can give this to Alex, and you show it on the screen. Maybe a better one. But that is like right after it's all done, and it's a full across the entire wall, so I'm going to have a lot of storage there.
This is the back wall when you walk in, right?
Yep, that far back wall where I used to have the curtain on it. And
Very nice.
If you were to like look behind you, you'd see all the shit in my room just piled up and had to be moved out of the way for that.
Yeah.
And I have to reorganize a couple other things. But it was a little bit of a pain in the ass because I put in a one by four connected to the studs running all the way across the middle of that wall, and then had to fasten all of the shelves to that. Well, come to find out, the dude that put in the drywall in that wall didn't do it in a straight line, so it's kind of wavy.
No.
So trying to make those shelves look like a flat and all level process required shims and a lot of swearing. But we did it. My daughter was a great help. You know, she actually did a really good job. She's good at reading IKEA instructions and using Allen wrenches. That's what we learned from
those are the key skills of putting together IKEA furniture.
Yeah, this is a lot of good bonding time. let her use the power drill and everything. So,
are you going to put some lights in that bad boy?
That is the next thing. And the thing that pissed me off was feeling this moment of accomplishment that I got it done, and then realizing I can't really put a lot of shit in there yet, because if I'm going to put in lights, I gotta wait till the fucking lights are in.
Yeah. Is that also an IKEA thing?
No, I bought these IKEA light pucks thinking that they would work, but because each of those shelves is hardwood and not glass, you pretty much have to you have to have lighting under each of the shelves. Luckily, I have two outlets in the wall and one outlet in the ceiling there, and then I cut out in the underside the outlets that were in the wall. I cut in the back of the cabinet so I could get access to those. So they're kind of hidden across there. So it's going to be a bit of process of putting those LED strips and then probably doing soldering to make the wiring and hide the wiring. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to do this time, I'm going to tell myself this now, I'm going to spray paint all the wiring black first, because every motherfucker makes the wires. They make it in white. And then just wires. They're just always in white. Yeah, for the low voltage wires, okay. The really thin stuff. There's always the rubber cable thing around the wire is always white. And I know me, and I know I'd get them all in there, and I'd look and be like, there's fucking white wires that I have hidden there in that really dark, almost black wood. So
yeah.
And the last thing I want to talk about, did you buy Diablo 4, dude?
No, I did not.
Dude, you need to fucking buy Diablo 4.
Why, dude? I'm playing Breath of the Wild right now, and it is amazing.
Shoot me in the head.
It's a good game. No. I'm not the kind of person that would enjoy, I've never been the kind of person to enjoy an adventure game, but honestly, it's what I wanted Diablo to kind of be. It's too much, maybe there's too much puzzle solving, but it has really interesting combat.
You like that your fucking weapon breaks every 3 minutes?
That is annoying. I am hoping, I don't know, but I'm hoping in the future I will have weapons that survive for longer and then I can maintain and stuff like that. But for now, it is a minor annoyance.
Spoiler, yes. You don't.
The big bad armor sets with big nasty swords, they don't last forever.
Nope. There's one weapon in the entire game. I won't tell you what it is or where to get it. I don't have it. There's one weapon in the entire game that is indestructible.
Okay, that is a mild annoyance.
Yep. There is a quest I don't know if there's more of them, so have you Have you beat any of the Divine Beasts yet?
I beat it. No, I've been playing the game for a week. So I'm I've defeated 15 shrines.
Okay. So you get to the main, the main quest, because the game doesn't really have much of any direction, and we ran around for a week because my daughter and I play it. Not knowing what the fuck to do. Eventually you get to where you get these divine beasts. And we've only beaten one, which those are the coolest part of the game, because they are both a dungeon. There's, again, too much puzzle solving, but a good amount of puzzle solving, some combat, and then really cool boss fights. But there's a weapon you get through there that if you break it, you can bring it back to a dude in town, and he will reforge it.
Oh, okay.
For free, but then you got to go back there. But it's in an area you can teleport close to. So maybe there's more of that stuff too. Anyway, I don't like a fucking game that discourages me from fighting, because that's what the weapon breaking does. It discourages me from fighting.
It doesn't discourage me so much, because I feel like I have so many weapons on hand all the time, because everyone that I've killed drops a weapon virtually.
And yeah,
so.
But they're shitty.
Yeah, it's true. They are.
And you get a weapon a lot of them, 10, 12, 15, whatever, and then you'll get a weapon that's 30 or 40 or whatever, and you're I don't want to use it. That's how I get. I'm a fucking hoarder, though. I'm
You're a weapon hoarder?
Yeah, I'm a raccoon. I don't, I have my shinies. I can't give them up.
Yeah.
It's broken forever.
Here's a question. Would you rather deal with durability and having to go back and fix stuff and, pay for, items took rare materials to craft, and it required those rare materials to fix something, and they were kind of inconvenient to get. Like, would you prefer that system, the durability system?
I would prefer something over nothing. Yeah. I would prefer whether, even if it costs rupees, because rupees are not like a easy thing to do. Like, if I get one weapon and it's like, yeah, this is a really good one, and I know it's going to cost me like a decent amount of my rupees to fix, but at least I know I have the option.
Yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, I think I prefer that too.
I haven't played the new one yet, even though we got it, because we want to beat this one first, and that one just looks even more way out in left field with the making everything out of like Legos and bullshit to make stuff, but I don't know if the weapon stuff has changed.
Okay. Well, anyways, Diablo.
Diablo is just way better than fucking Zelda anyway.
Okay, I love the aesthetic of Diablo. Oh, it is so the good. Sexiest game. But man, when I was playing it, like, I literally fell asleep. Like, I was...
Three, though, dude.
I know, but so is the combat that much more engaging? That much more, like, interesting? Like, am I not just hitting a series of buttons over and over and over and over and over again? Health pot, hit, you know? Isn't that what combat is?
No, I mean, I guess kind of, but, like, you have to know your which skills to use when and what's your order and what you're going to do for a boss fight and what you're going to do when you're just trying to get through stuff fast. Like, so, yeah, it's more complex than that.
Okay, if it's more, that's fine, but in Diablo 3, that's how complex it was. Everything I hit in the same fucking way. And it just, depending on what I was hitting, I might hit for longer or shorter. That was it. And
you're,
I was just like.
You're also playing probably at the beginning when the difficulty is really easy. And when the game ramps up, you can't just face roll stuff.
Like, yeah, but so the version's game of ramping up is I beat the game and now I'm going to fucking play it again.
That's not how it works in this one.
Okay. Okay. But that was how it worked in D3, right?
Yeah. This game is.
Who the fuck wants to do that?
Yeah, that was this bad.
Okay. Anyways.
Also, don't play it on a console like a scrub.
Difference.
Mouse and keyboard, baby.
I understand. I'm a fucking PC master racer as well, but like, it's not gonna change the way I felt about the game.
It works for a isometric action RPG. When you use your mouse to move, the amount of just like think about playing. It's the same thing as fucking. It's click to move. Think about playing Dota on a goddamn controller.
Yeah, I mean the experience wouldn't be great, but I feel like you would still understand what the game's about.
Yeah. You're right. You get the game. 4 is better than 3 in all ways, and I was a no-lifer in D3 when it came out for like a year and a half, and I'd come back for the seasons and shit, but like, it's an open-world game. You're not railroaded, because in D3, like, you'd go into an area, and it's basically you're on railroad tracks. You just have to follow the path and stuff. Mm-hmm. This is completely open-world. You can run. You get a fucking mount. You can run from one side of the world to the other.
Okay.
It's beautifully macabre, the whole
plan is.
Fucking rogue, baby.
Rogue.
Yeah, because rogue is closest thing to ninja.
Mm.
Ninjas and assassins are the best in every game ever.
Okay.
And rogue, I'm dual wield melee rogue. Because rogue, you can either go range, go bow, archer, or you can go melee. And somewhere in between, you get traps, you get grenades. Come on, man.
Come on, man.
It's so good.
I mean, I do love the look of it.
It's fucking great. It's fucking great, dude. Just try it once.
Okay. It costs $60.
Oh, my God, dude.
Oh, my God.
That is a box of shitty Space Marines.
Yeah, that I never buy.
It's good to have one on hand. Never know. Never know when you're going to have to release a 15th Space Marine video.
No, I do know. I'm done. I'm done.
Okay, enough of this preamble ramble. Let's get on to the things that are less exciting.
On to what we painted.
I want to see this Nephi.
I have just been working on Neferata slowly. The actual writer is done. The Dread Abyssal is not. There's like this midsection in her dress that I need to paint. I was going to paint that once I had actually glued her to the Dread Abyssal just so I could like actually paint what's visible and not what's not visible, because I don't want to waste my time.
Ain't no one got time for that. Exactly. Well, you mean like the parts of her... Or skirt thing that's still kind of red?
Yeah. No. Maybe.
Oh, this back thing that's black?
Yeah. So that part of her dress, I haven't painted yet.
I kind of dig this darker red that flows into the cream color, too. Like, you could just edge highlight and call that fucking good.
I was going to paint it like a dark navy blue, because that's kind of like an in-scheme thing. And also, it looks nice as a dark color right now, is that dark gray in the middle.
Yes.
Wait, hold on. Maybe I'm thinking about the wrong thing. Not that dark gray. The dark gray isn't changing. On top of that, the top layer of the cake, that's the part that's unpainted.
Layer of the cake?
Yeah. The dress cake. She's got a very long dress. But yeah, just standard vampire stuff for me. Kind of that pale bluish skin, teal eyes, red armor. Also, I broke her fucking weapon. You can tell it's a little fucking bendy.
Oh, right at the hand.
I know, dude. I keep breaking it.
And you can't get that perfect straight thing back ever again.
Don't fucking tell me that.
Dude, it's gone. It's gone. Let it be.
It's gone. You're fucked.
Yeah.
What if I drilled a hole in her hand and I like inserted the spear shaft like as its own like little peg dowel thing?
Yeah, if you had a small, like one of the really thin paper clips,
mm-hmm.
you could drill down into her hand, make sure that paper clip was
straight possible,
on there.
Right.
And then you can just pop that. You drill the same hole up into the spear thing. Shunk. Yeah, that would work.
I don't even need to drill a hole into the spear thing. The spear thing can be its own pin because it's so thin, right?
True.
Like there's space above her hand, right? This doesn't like immediately get into like the spiky bits.
Yeah, you got about an eighth of an inch. Plenty of space.
Okay.
We're talking about tiny things. Eighth of an inch is a mile.
I know it is. Honestly, that's enough. Yeah.
That's enough.
But yeah, not an insanely amazing paint job, but like, you know, good enough. Good
what
enough.
The hell are you? When I have painted, I love these the mounts that these Mortarks have.
Red Abyssal.
But I'm always confused, and I haven't painted one largely because typically there is a process of painting inside to out, where you paint the thing that's the skin or the closest thing to skin, and you work your way out to the layers of the model.
Yeah.
And this thing's a fucking enigma because with the skulls inside it and the bone specifically, there's no right answer.
No.
Whichever one you paint first, the second one's going to suck.
Yeah.
That is what we
want. Honestly, yeah. And I've already gotten like black like all over the white skulls that I painted. Yeah. And the step that I'm on right now is I'm fixing that black that I like accidentally washed under the skulls. But I like the pink, like glowy white skulls beneath the rib cage. I think that looks really cool.
Yeah, I think I like the idea of it being the bones being darker to really punch that.
I need to highlight the bones a little bit. Also, I have this insanely saturated red oil paint. I want to oil wash the white skulls with this bright red, like, I don't know, like panel liner kind of.
I think I know which oil paint you're talking about because you thought it was something else. You bought it and it was so bright. And then you
Yeah.
You got to find uses for those.
I know.
Those oopsies we make in our hobby purchases.
Absolutely.
It's an opportunity.
But
yeah.
It's cool. It looked cool though. I could be like, okay, that's an effect I can use elsewhere.
Yeah. And I like that the red to white continues on the ghosts too.
Yes.
I like that a lot. Yeah, I think honestly how much time you want to spend on this, because the edge highlighting is going to be a fucking bear.
You mean on the bone?
On the bone.
I don't know, man. Dude. Maybe should I fucking dry brush? Should I do that new dry brush tech?
Yes, dude.
Yes, dude.
Because it will look 80%, 85% as good if you got the dry brush tech down where you're not doing true dry. It's a little bit damp.
True dry.
True dry, baby. You don't want that true dry.
That semi-wet.
Yeah, you want that semi-wet. just damp. And you do that, and then you're gonna have a little bit of like touching up to do probably around the skulls and the stuff that's touching close.
Maybe I should do that first while I'm touching them up already.
Yeah, so you do the dry brush is your next step. Then you touch up the skull stuff, and then you do the red oil wash because that will cover any of your like imperfections. That's the order of steps I would go from here.
Genius.
The only thing I wouldn't dry brush, you know, you're just probably going to have to go in with a brush, is the stuff all around her where it gets real down in there and stuff. But that's it's not very much.
Also, the arms are large. They have large surface area of bones. Maybe I would just paint those in a traditional style with layering and stuff.
I would dry brush it all first, and then you'll know. Then you'll be like, yeah, that looks a little funky because there's a big wider forearm bit there.
That's
maybe
fair.
I'll glaze it up. I'll layer it up from that. So
layer it up.
Lure it up. Looks good, though.
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I need to finish her, and I need to finish a 20-man unit of GGs.
GG boys.
And then I have a 2K point of AOS fully painted.
That's not, you don't got much to go, bro.
I know. I'm going to make a little video called finishing up my AOS army, and then I'm going to show it all off. It's going to be sexy.
Oh, that's a good video idea, too.
I know.
Doesn't it feel good when there's a video idea that is tied to something you already wanted to do?
Know, yeah. Yeah, it's very nice.
Sometimes that happens.
It happens for me all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, it does happen to you all the time.
And I mean, I bet I pay for it.
You pay for it.
Let's not explain. All right. What did you paint, my friend?
I painted that little bunny boy right there. It's in my little bunny.
Yeah, this is painted super nicely.
His name is Rupert. So
is it Rupert?
Yeah. So this is a Cobra Mode miniature, and it's a sponsored video.
You're such an artist. Them.
And here's the thing. These guys, Cobra Mode has been with me since, I kind of was looking back. They've been with me since the get-go. They were either my first or one of my very first sponsors. And I feel so fortunate that, one, they've stuck with me and keep contacting me and want me to do stuff. And two, but more importantly than that, their shit is actually so fucking good. Like, it's a 3D printable Patreon / you can buy individual models on their My Mini Factory. And I just love them. They're just so different. They're so aesthetically pleasing. They put a lot of effort into the pose, into really characterful minis. And so this one was actually just kind of a study of light and doing it in a fast way, where I did, like, I primed the whole model black and then I did a pre light scheme. So I sketched out the lights in like a dark imperial blue and then a magenta to just give me the direction and build up a little bit of the vibrancy of how potent the light would be on different parts of the model. And then I just painted over top of that and then didn't paint the back of the model. So
I was going to ask, did you forget the back? No, I was kidding. So your sketch was dark blue and magenta, a pretty dark color?
Yeah.
So you weren't using like a brighter like gray or like a, like,
no, it was
a higher value color.
Yeah, it was strictly from very saturated, highly pigmented colors. And slightly thin too, so you could actually use a big fat brush and just kind of like just truly sketching out where the light would, where each of those lights, because one of them's bottom left is the blue, top right for him is the magenta, where they would hit and then how potent they would be, because wanting to put the focus around the face. And then it was just kind of layering and following the roadmap that I set for myself. And then it's a back and forth process of do a layer and then do a glaze of reinforcing that light and adding more, like on the magenta, I would like layer the fur and then I do a thin glaze of magenta plus a little bit of sunny skin tone over everything I painted. And then I'd repeat the process, doing the highlight up and then doing a slightly lighter glaze over everything, process up, highlight up, glaze again. And then, that was it. Like that mini took me less than 4 hours because it was the same steps, but just focusing on light, just focusing on angle of light, just focusing on making sure the light is influencing what I'm painting and it's creating depth in the colors instead of constantly trying to grab more paints to try to add more things. So,
yeah. I mean, I love the tiny micro texture that you got on like the head, because like that, you get that when you do that process of building up and kind of fuzzing it with a glaze and then building it up. It's like you get this like incredible nuance that you can't get without just going through that process step by step.
Yeah. And of the 4 hours, 2 hours, we're just basically doing his head.
Yeah.
Because that's what matters. That is the thing that you're drawing your attention to. That's what really sets the tone for the rest of the piece in terms of depth of color, in terms of how much detail you've put in there. Suddenly it feels like the rest of the model is more detailed than it is.
Yeah, this is true.
It is very rough in a lot of areas.
He gets to make that choice because the sculpt didn't force it on him.
Yeah.
Which I think is huge, right? You could have made, like a lesser sculpt would have like built the texture into the fur.
Yeah.
And this is just so much better.
Everything's smooth. There's so much room on that to do.
Well, I know.
Like freehand on the, you know, on the pants or freehand on the robe.
Or like badges, yeah, on his shoulders or whatever. Like,
they know restraint.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah, that's a huge thing. That's a great word to use to describe it too.
Yeah. So it's just so much fun. It's one of those, this is a great example of a model where it was like, as soon as I saw this, because I saw this maybe 6 months ago when they had released it on their My Mini Factory page, I'm like, oh, that looks like something I'd love to paint. But I don't know when I would paint it, you know? And then to sit down and paint it. And I'm just like, I'm so glad I painted this. Feeling like you're forced to paint something because you need to have a unit of these for your army, or because it's the new hotness, so I should buy Leviathan because everyone's going to buy Leviathan, so I guess I got to paint the whatever, whatever in it. There's a level of that where it's like, if you need to convince yourself that it's something you should paint, you're going to enjoy it less than you just see the thing and you imagine how cool it could be, or it inspires you to want to pick up a brush. Just paint that, man. Just paint that. So the video, by the time you guys see this, is been out just for us. It just dropped it today. It's the title of the video, at least working title right now, is...
It's a working title and it's live right now.
I'm not painting 40K Leviathan, and why you shouldn't either is the name of the video. And it's that. It's because that doesn't inspire excitement in me. This does. And then just having fun and sharing a couple of things. So that's what I painted. I'm really happy. I had put it in my little display case, and then I got it out last night to bring it here. And you have a good experience in painting a model is when you go back and you look at it and you're like, oh, I'm really happy I did that.
Yeah.
It brings you joy to just see the thing you painted. And it's not the best thing I've ever painted, and it's not perfectly smooth, and I don't care because it's just, I like it. I like the model.
I will say I really underestimated the value of a display cabinet. Like, I just got one as well. Just like you got your built-in, and I put everything in one place. And like, whenever I walk by, like, very often I will just stand and look at the stuff.
Yeah,
I'm just like, man, this is all me, baby.
Yeah,
like, you're nice.
It's kind of weird too, because you have this bit of a nostalgia of the time when you painted it. It's like, oh, I remember I painted that. It was like 2 years ago. Oh, we were building up our guild ball teams, and we're gonna do that video. And
I guess
whenever I see because I have my guild ball squad in my regular glass IKEA cabinet, and every time I see those make me happy. I know I'm a better painter now. I'm proud of that work, and they look so cool together.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all these things can be true.
Yeah, and sometimes it makes you think about like how hard it was, and like how trivial it seems now. It's like, man, I'm way past that, so I don't feel the burden. But I remember being in that moment and being like hating life. But then, now I'm past it, and I'm better for it.
Yeah,
I get that feeling a lot.
And the good thing is you have to go through those times.
Yeah. Or
maybe this isn't a good thing, but it's the reality of how this works. The reality of anything that
it's
requires
hard.
Effort
yeah.
to get better at. It's like you have to go through those, but just know one day you'll look back at it and that won't be the thing that gives you the stress and the pressure.
Right.
So,
I mean, I think life's all about doing the hard things, right? If you spent your entire life just, you know, kind of doing things like in mediocrity, then... I don't know. To me, that would feel like a life wasted, but that's for me to decide, and you can decide your own things as well.
You're just eating Doritos and playing video games.
That could be good enough for some people, and that's totally fine.
Yeah. But there is 100% truth to that, and the things that require more effort and more of you are the things that will give you the most satisfaction upon completion. I think that is a universal truth.
Mm.
How much you want to balance that to create balance in your life is also very important.
Yes, that is very important. The sponsor this week is our friends over at Dragon Trapper's Lodge.
This month, at the Soldier tier, they're introducing a brand new faction, the Fiends of Incandriox.
The first wave of this release was over 20 unique models of hellish-looking dragonkin called Drakoth, and they complete the look with spiked armor and some of these ghoulishly long tongues that just leave me unsettled.
My favorite has to be the centerpiece of this line called the Abyssal Hellkite. Come on, dude. How great is that name?
I imagine like Satan's daughter flying a hellkite.
You know? It's just fucking bones and bat wings. Its barbed tail and exploded rib cage are both nice, but the single eye atop its head enshrined in a frill of bone spikes plant this model firmly into the incredibly awesome category.
It would look right at home on the cover of a Trivium or Rhapsody album. That is to say, the dragon is metal, but so is the rest of the line, and the Infernal War Drakes, which can be mounted or unmounted right down to the rank and file Drakoth Infernals with cannons.
Dragon Trapper's Lodge is also offering a free 7-day trial for anyone, so you can print the set risk-free. And if you do, you can then subscribe to their Patreon at the Soldier tier for just $12 a month, where they'll be releasing the rest of the faction over the next 3 months.
If you're a wargamer, the Fiends of Incandriox are already available on the Army Forge app for the one-page rules system.
Or if war games aren't your preferred flavor of do, for the same $12 a month, you can join the Trappers tier, designed for all you RPG players and game masters.
This month, you get access to a campaign called Doggos and Dragons with some awesome sculpts, including some great Shuni proxies for Pathfinder 2E. Or if you're a DM, the Hellhounds and Blink Dog sculpts will be a great additions to any table.
Plus, it's got that legally distinct Flakor-looking good boy.
Both tiers include a 30% discount code for their store on My Mini Factory that lasts the whole month to help you get some of their previous offerings, like the Ghost Dragon Trapper Pack, which gives off some serious Robot Chicken Gray Pumpkin vibes.
And if you can't decide between war games and tabletop RPGs, there is the Veteran tier for $18, which includes everything plus some extra bonus stuff.
Possibly the best of all of Dragon Trapper's Lodge's sculpts come pre-supported so you can get them printed fast and under your brush quickly.
Make sure you head on over to patreon.com/DragonTrappersLodge to check out which tier suits you best. And make sure you check out those new STLs for the Fiends of Incandriox.
Shout out to DTL for sponsoring this episode. You can find all those lovely links down in the show notes or descriptions below, depending on where you're listening. Now, on to the main topic.
All right, we got a good topic for you today from the likes of one goody PP named Brian. And Brian asks, how would you change your work in progress / complete armies aesthetically? What a great cue.
Yeah, we saw this question. We're like, that's a pretty good question. And now I second guess all of my painting decisions for my armies. So we each brought example models.
Yeesh.
From our different armies.
And we'll show pics, though, for you guys while you're watching.
And for those that are just listening, whether you are working out or you are driving somewhere or you just sit in a dark room and listen to us.
Or you're taking a poo.
Yeah, taking a poo-poo. You could have your phone out and watch us there. But regardless, maybe you poop in the dark. I don't know.
I mean, screen's glow. It doesn't matter if it's dark.
Shit. I thought that was what night mode meant.
That's just the mode for my phone when it's dark.
We've reached night mode. We will... What I'm trying to say is we will try to use the words of our voice to describe visually so in your brain matter you can picture what we're talking about.
Wow. I think you just used 80 words when like 12 would have been fine. We're going to use our words.
I didn't know where I was going.
You know, you like walked into that sentence and you're just like, how do I get out of this one?
That sentence was as dark as night mode.
That was a joke that I stole from Theo Vaughn. I just want to be clear about that. Okay, anyways, please, for the audience's sake, describe with your words what the visual impact of these models are and how you would have changed them aesthetically.
Okay, wow. God, that was a lot of words.
I know.
So I think, do we want to start with ones we would change the most on and we can wrap up on a more high note? So of yours, which of yours are you like least happy with or one that you think you'd have the most changes with?
Deldar, for sure.
Deldar.
Jakari, Dark Eldar, yes.
Oh, maybe we start and say, just is it like a little spoiler, like what's the name of each of them? So what are your four different things you're going to discuss today? You're going to discuss your Dark Eldar.
Are we recording the podcast right now? Or are you like giving this a little in-between thing?
Yeah, no, this is live.
Oh, shit. Okay. What are you telling me to do? Oh, sorry. Dark Eldar, Guild Ball team, Morticians, and also my Novitiate Kill team. Okay. They're all things I'm going to change.
Okay. Got it. I have...
Is that what you're asking me?
Yep, that's what I was asking.
Okay, you seem like you're disappointed in my answer or something.
I thought there was more, but you're not counting.
I'm happy with her.
Okay.
I don't want to change Neferata.
I don't change anything.
Yeah.
I have my Death Guard army. I have my Night Lords army. I have my Soulblight Grave Lords, specifically the 120 zombies. but I do have other stuff painted. And then my
Boner Boys!
The Boner Boys. The Osiarch Bone Reapers. All my stuff is bad guys.
No, it's not. I mean, maybe I just have more of an ego than you do. But no, I'm very happy with my Soulblight army. Also, they're fresh off the paint line, so I like them a lot. And also, I'm pretty happy with my Wood Elves. But these things, I'd make big changes on.
Okay, let's start with those Deldar.
Deldar. Okay, so I'm a hipster. That's why I don't like Space Marines. But also, I couldn't paint Dark Eldar like the box art. Ugh, who would do that? Ugh. I get value in being different,
mm-hmm.
just for the sake of it. And in this case, it was different to the point of just being a bad paint job. So that's the first ones I ever painted. Had this very ochre armor, tan skin suits. It's okay. It's a fine scheme. But I wasn't in love with it. And so I tried to change it up. And that's what this next warrior is over here.
Okay.
I did a bunch of yellow tests. And, you know, I have this maroon shaded kind of more sickly yellow color. That's more neon and less ochre. And it's fine, but like of all the tests I did, I didn't really like any of them. I didn't think any of them were really cool. I don't think I really pulled off yellow Dark Eldar, at least in a Dark Eldar way. You know, they kind of feel like Eldar models or I don't know. Something about them is not clicking for me. I don't exactly know why.
Okay. Yeah. So the dark part of Dark Eldar isn't really coming through here. No. First of all, the yellow banana boy, the original guy here, I just now realized that the shape of their helmet also kind of looks like the top of a banana.
Yeah.
So you could have just like painted the tip of that little spike on there black.
Yeah.
And then based on how much experience in battles they've gone through, the bananas get slightly more spotted.
Yeah. Should I get a bunch of Dark Eldar heads and put them together in like a little banana like bundle? Get a little palm tree.
And yeah, that's the ones that are riding on their space boats. They're just in these little clusters.
Yeah, that's how they sleep.
Hanging from the masts.
Yeah. They sleep in little banana clusters.
I mean, banana boys would be a great army, but okay. I never really thought about it that way. I really like the OG banana one in terms of it just being a really good to look at paint scheme, but it does not feel dark.
Yeah.
I like the idea of yellow, but almost making that yellow like a scary screaming spot color.
Yes.
And the rest of the paint scheme is more like dark.
Yes.
And sinister.
Yeah. So other choices I made that I think are problematic. I went with a bronze TMM color, and I also went with a tan color on like the gun coverings and stuff like that. And then like a teal spot color. Teal spot color works fine for the eyes and shit, but like the brass and also the tan and the khaki and the yellow, it's just all so
samey same.
Yeah,
you put this under you take a picture of this and put it under black and white.
Yeah, oh my god, scalping gray, one shade of gray.
Yeah, they're all kind of, and I think that kind of leans into your worry of not being dark enough when you literally don't have much dark colors at all on here.
Yeah.
Or anything that to change it up. But yeah, you kind of lose, because like the paint jobs are quite good and you've dealt a lot with a lot of the angles and the edges on all their plates. But because everything is a really similar tone, it kind of lose that, the hard work you've done a bit on it.
Yeah. So how would I change these to make them better? I've figured it out. I've taken enough steamy meditative showers, and the answer has come down from James Workshop's heaven.
James Workshop, okay.
I'm thinking Tactical Dark Eldar. Desert Tactical Dark Eldar. So
is this like Tentacool from Pokemon?
No.
Okay.
Not even close.
Damn.
I'm thinking black armors that's hotted with cool tones. I'm thinking khakis. I'm thinking, what if there was some kind of cool digital camo that like, or like a certain style of camo that would combine black, warm brown, khaki, and all these things together. And then what if I had, like you just said, a super bright ass neon yellow like lenses and stuff like that, and like little, like they have like these like drug things and tubes, but like that kind of thing. So what if it was like black armor, tan fatigues? What if it was tan armor, black like leather suit? Like I think black and tan would look so fucking cool together, and like kind of military, and like, but that tan still kind of in that yellow world a little bit, and then you put that spot color in there, and then it kind of like helps you understand, oh, okay, yeah, a little bit yellow. And then like the blue black would help to kind of balance the yellow and the tan and stuff like that.
Yeah, you get a cold and a warm.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on the more on the warm yellow.
Yeah, so I'm very excited about that, and I want to paint some Dark Eldar in that style legitimately. I think I'm going to do it in the next month.
Cool. I think, too, one thing to keep in mind is your base color, because you did the base color to be very similar to the color of the models there, too, so they don't jump out.
Mm.
So you could use that as, if you were doing a bunch more dark, don't go super dark in the base, because then the model doesn't pop out. It's almost like you're having a picture frame. I often think about that with the basing, especially on an army, mm-hmm. that there's a distinct separation between the model and the basing. So you could have something like that standard kind of rusty Mars thing would really jump. If that's too much color in a totally different direction, something else that's maybe brighter, something to think about there.
Well, I have lore for my army that
Jesus Christ.
I'm trying to base my basing decision off of, so...
The space pirates only live on one planet? That feels kind of odd, doesn't it?
Well, they got a home world. You gotta have a place you call home, John.
Dude, not pirates, dude. Home is the boat. Boats and homes,
they have
dude.
Boat mode and home mode, okay?
Boats and homes. Boats and homes. The Nina, the Pinta, the Santa Maria.
I actually don't know this song very well, but I know he's referencing.
That's the last line I can sing of it.
You know what it reminds me of?
Do you in the butt while I'm drinking sangria. Okay.
Okay, that's the other line he knows.
I mean, okay. Okay, so we got the Deldar fixed. Check that off the list. Okay, my first one and my most egregious one. Now, I don't say egregious, but the one I'm least happy with.
The shittiest one. The
shittiest one is my, which is... Yeah. Ironic because it's my most recent of all these.
Yeah, these ones suck.
No. Is my Night Lords.
All right, what would you change here?
All right, so here's, I'm going to talk about, let me give excuses why this is bad. This is me trying to paint an entire 2,000 point army in a weekend.
Hey, okay, there's backstory to this.
Yeah, here's my lore.
We're going to go in all of it.
But more importantly than that.
Actually, these are related.
Yeah.
These two, the Dark Eldar and these are related because of the backstory.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they're cousins. And so more importantly than that was the rush combined with the fact that I did not do a test model. I did not paint a model to know this is what it's going to look like and I'm happy with how that looks like. And even if the execution isn't great because of the speed, I know the color scheme works. The why I don't like it is... It's similar actually to yours. It's got so many dark colors. And then I did an all over, not oil, like enamel wash. I did an all over dark enamel wash. And that works really well for my Osiark Bone Reapers because those have so many light colors and it added depth. Here, when the colors start already as dark, you just muddy them. You don't add the full depth. So things like the flesh that are showing, I should have started with a much more sickly bright flesh, right? Something almost even like a, I would have liked to start with, what's the color? More like a zombie flesh, right? So it's kind of undead or whatever. And then the wash would have a lot more effect. And then I could even go back in and add some warmth to the flesh through like a magenta oil wash or going over it with a Carabug Crimson shade paint to add some warmth, but having the brightest points be much more sickly and bright because there's not enough bright there and you can't really see the flesh parts very well.
Yeah, that would honestly really break it up really well because there's skin on the thigh, there's skin on like the bicep, there's skin here on the back, and like there's like skin at many like connective points on the model, like from a design standpoint. And so that would like really like, that would like just help. That would just lift everything up. Everything would go up. Even the dark spots would feel more visible and like clearer.
Yeah. There's one thing. Number two, there's a fuckload of stupid ass trim in these sons of bitches.
And what's the solution, John?
Don't do an all over enamel wash because I did all that work to do that. And then it just dulls them all down too much. And I think almost like either a pin wash. I'm trying to, like, I don't know, honestly, if there's a way to paint Chaos Space Marines fastly.
Well, I guess the way is you spray paint the whole thing metallic. And then, like, you use, like, Iron Painter speed paint on, like, the panels and leave the trim alone.
Yeah.
That's a specific look, though, right? That's a metallic colored thing. So if you're not going for that, then I don't know what the solution is, being quite honest.
But you're saving time on hand painting all the trim that way, but then you're also making yourself have a lot of work of any kind of buildup you're doing to the panels because you can't use an airbrush for that. So what I did is I did layers of airbrushing to do highlights on the panels, and then I don't think either of those is a
no, it always sucks.
Is the easy decision.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's a really tough one. The other thing that I don't like is I actually think that it's too muted and too desaturated and not enough pop in the dark, you know, the dark blue armor. Like, it kind of fades too much. And they don't have a really, like, vibrant blue armor. I didn't want them to have that. I wanted them to feel much more, like, grimdark and nasty. But I think you still need to have a big jump in contrast, and whether that's the lightning bolts with just a little glaze of something over them to really make them pop, where the majority of the plates can still be dark. Another thing that I did wrong in this was I overdid that red OSL.
I don't think so.
This model looks is pretty good with it, but some of them, like, because everything's so dark, that's kind of all you see. This one doesn't have a lot of it on there, but, like, everyone's eyes have that. And I was heavy-handed. I had that PSI too high, and I was just kind of, like, trying to get them done, and the overspray was too much. But, yeah, I think – I don't know of the solution for this other than make this project a more long-term project that you're willing to spend more time on and just enjoy the process, which is – not possible with painting chaos trim. Don't rush it and go for a slightly higher quality that you're willing to space out over time. I don't think that this is, at least where I'm at, or have cracked the fucking code on how to do this kind of a army fast. I just don't think it lends itself well.
Yeah, that's a good point to make, honestly. Some armies do just paint up quickly, like Space Marines, like Necrons, and some other armies that are broken up a bunch of ton of materials, like such as a Battle, for instance, AdMech, they're much harder to paint just because you have to, it's going to, like, if you're not willing to use, like, sorry, if you use aerosol cans for one part, you have a lot more brushworks to still to go. And for John painting all that gold trim, holy shit, that probably took you like 75% of the time.
Took so long. Yeah. I had two of, I don't know if you know the model, but they're the hell turkeys.
Yeah.
Those things.
Yeah.
Because they have four wings, because they have a wing and then a wing underneath the wing. And the whole thing is
spider web.
Spider web with that fucking trim. Yeah. I lost my goddamn mind, Pete.
I know. That sounds miserable. I did one heavy metal Space Marine, and that was miserable.
There's a reason why I have not done another army painting video since this one.
What's that?
Because this sucked so fucking bad. It wasn't that I don't want to do one, that this made the process so terrible for me to do that I just have not wanted to. Now, I am feeling some of that come back, especially identifying an army that I'm excited to paint an army quickly for, that I feel speed painting, you can lean into techniques and it will look good.
Slaves of Darkness?
No. They're going to be as bad as these because they're all fucking chaos trim too.
I'm just trying to think about the armies you've recently like got into. What's the other one?
Tyranids would be the one.
Nids?
Nids boy.
You're a Nids boy?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have some cool ideas for able to replicate a whole army of that.
Oh, was it based on your video?
I'm going to do a different one than that, a different scheme than that.
Okay.
But I feel like they lend themselves well to the art of the airbrush.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Which is important.
Okay. So these Dark Eldar and this...
Night Lords.
Oh, my God. I lost my mind there for a second. They're related because I remember I was like, let's do a collab. And I was like, I want to make a video about how long it takes to paint a 40K army. And you're like, oh, what if it was... paint a 40K army in 48 hours. And I was like, okay, maybe. And then I tried, and I was like, there's no fucking way. And then I gave up. So then what I did was I was writing down the amount of hours it took me on the various steps of painting Dark Eldar. And I have like an ongoing log now of like how long it's taking me to paint the army. And it's funny because like I'm just going to revert it all now. I'm going to go with my scheme that I actually really like. And so that's the biggest lesson for me is that... I did my test schemes, and I was happy with none of them, and I still proceeded forward, and now that's all wasted time.
Yeah.
Maybe some of it is going to help me out and be salvageable, but like it was truly wasted time. And so I should really only go forward with confidence when I have something that I really like.
When you hear people on YouTube videos talk about test schemes, because Scott and I talk about it in a fair number of videos and other content creators do as well, it is not bullshit. It is literally the most important step if you're going to paint an army. is being willing. And you almost, why it's tough, because you almost feel like you're spending time on a throwaway thing and using up a model on a throwaway thing, because it may not be what you want and you're either not going to use that model at all. I still keep it for reference, so I'm not going to repaint it. Maybe I will.
You could repaint
it. You certainly could. You certainly could. Like when I did my OBR one, I painted one all the way up, and then I painted a second one all the way up, and both of them I just kept as reference, because that second one that I was really happy with, I wanted to constantly reference that, and that's so freaking important.
Yeah. I mean, some of your tests might be, because like as you get closer and closer to what you want, you're going to get closer and closer to looking like what the end result is. And some of the later ones, you probably don't have to redo. But like I think I did like, I don't know, like 14 tests for yellow. And I just repainted over all of them with that initial maroon shadow color.
Yeah. I don't mean like you can't repaint it. You can and probably should.
Just like lost time, though.
Right. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm spending all this time painting this one model and it may not be the one that I want to do.
Right.
You are saving yourself so much time
by
figuring out each of the steps. Feeling confident in what it's going to look like at the end.
That's really, the big thing for me.
Yeah.
Just like knowing that once I've invested all this time, because you don't want to figure that out after you painted a 10-man unit and that took you like whatever 30 hours to do that. It's like, you know, shit, I don't like this. You want to figure that out after 2 hours of painting one Space Marine, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. What's your next one, Scooter?
My next one is my Guild Ball team. So I didn't really know like what my scheme was when I started painting the first model, which I actually don't have out here. I painted Obulus, the captain of my team. And I painted him in tans, grays, blacks, browns, and that was it. The scheme had, like, because he was like a mortician, and like I didn't feel like he'd have a bunch of crazy vibrant colors. And so like it didn't feel like the guys I was painting in the beginning had a scheme. I wasn't really making a choice about how all these models were like linked together.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, I started to add some purple. And so you can see in Ghast, he has purple eyes. And then even later on, like one of the last models I painted was Silence and Memory. That is, I think, Silence. And that's when I started to put purple in a big way. Purple that I highlighted with teal. Mm. So it has this very specific kind of cool indigo look. But yeah, so if I were to revert and go back in time, I would paint the initial Guild Ball models that I had made with more of that purple, which kind of gives the whole team more of an identity, and they feel more like an actual sports team a little bit.
Yeah.
But also like they're like linked together. Cause like I do a lot of blacks and tans and browns and whites and grays, and it's too much neutrals. There needs to be something that links them together.
I think you and I are both like tie or connected to or attracted to models that aesthetically don't have a lot of bright colors. Like we really like these undead things, these dark things, things. And you look at them or you envision them in your head, and in that, if they had like this bright ass bold pink somewhere on it, you're like, oh, that's not the cool undead bad guys I want. You know?
Speak for yourself. I love hot pink.
but then it doesn't feel like the fucking morticians. No. You know? Like, so
it's not suited for them.
It's hard to tell yourself I need to push out of there to add some level of color interest or some variation that at a 3-foot length kind of all looks like shades of gray.
Kind of, yeah. And I don't even necessarily think maybe it needs to be a color, but there was like, even if like everyone's pants were black, you know, there's a very basic idea. At least I would have made some choice about the squad as a whole that seemed like it linked them all.
Mm.
It's very clear to me that I painted each one at a time, and I did not think about how are these going to work together as a squad. And they obviously they work together because a lot of the colors are very similar. Mm. There's some of that purple that links them, but I would have liked a little bit more artistic intentionality, I think.
Yeah. They're well painted, too.
Thank you. I took my time on each one.
I think because when I did my Guild Ball squad, I did the same thing because that's one thing I really liked about Guild Ball is they're all part of a team, but they all are very unique, and they're all, each sculpt doesn't feel like too closely connected to the other ones. And so painting them all start to finish felt right. But identifying the color scheme, so the you'd have certain colors that would connect them. It was a much more fun way to paint them, I think, too.
Yeah, I think so, too, especially for skirmish games. Yeah. I prefer to do that for a lot of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's what I thought I would do.
Okay.
My next one is my Death Guard army, which is the very first army I ever painted. And I think I own about, 1,500 points of Death Guard that are fully painted, maybe more. And I've offloaded over the years some of the like unbuilt ones. Nothing
okay.
I've painted.
Okay, you scared me there.
Unbuilt ones and ones that are built, but I just didn't get around to. I got rid of my Mortarian and stuff because he wasn't even built. And I'm just like, I don't want the pressure of that. So this army was not batch painted. It was using a traditional, but kind of a little bit more like really dirty, grimy version. One of the things that I really like in what I did was how the metals came out. The metals feel very corroded. There's that lovely kind of reddish rust and then a dark to them.
Are they greenish, the metals?
No, it's just like a lead belcher with two different layers of wash, enamel wash, and oil wash on them. Black oil wash and a rust streaks enamel.
It looks green a little bit, and I fucking love that. But yeah, no, I totally agree with you. The metals look awesome. This whole model looks awesome. Like, this would be a stunning army if it was all painted to this quality.
Yeah, things that I would, I took my time because I had never painted an army before and I wanted each one to be different.
Sorry, I'm sorry. The vents, I've never seen the vents on the bottom of the guy. Nice little Easter egg there.
Yeah.
Matches the eyes. All right, proceed, sorry.
Yeah, so the vents down there, I kind of envisioned that they were, actually there was light coming out of them. Much like an alien spacecraft where it's like there's the lights that come out from the bottom parts.
Yeah, like the fog rolls out and you can see it's like like a little bridge comes down, alien walks out and fucking probes you. Yeah.
Yeah, so things that I, yes, the alien probes. Which for Death Guard would be some pretty nasty probes.
Yeah, this would fuck you up, dude.
He's got a proboscis.
That little thing right there, dude. Yeah. Woo!
Yeah.
Thank you.
Some things. I think I did too far much of a dark wash on the skin that's coming out the back. I wish that was more of like a sickly purple and irritated reddish more than just kind of a darker brown.
Yeah, that would kind of also separate it too because everything is kind of like a little bit brown, a little bit desaturated. It's like a purpley skin.
Yeah, you lose it. Even doing what I did there and then maybe like building up a quick layer of highlights and then hitting it all with that would separate it enough. Some quick edge highlights on the silvers where there's, it's all dulled down, but I didn't bring it back up. Just a couple of notches of, like a chrome color. And I feel like the green armor is not quite enough depth. I think probably some edge highlighting.
I disagree. I think it's totally good enough.
Yeah, I liked how there is some highlights and shadows in that green, but just a little bit of edge highlighting maybe. But the biggest thing was this was early on when I wasn't very good at airbrushing, and I kind of went a little bit heavy. Not so much the eye. It doesn't make sense that the eye would have that light is kind of around the eye.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a hood thing. Yeah,
he's got a hood, so the light wouldn't peek over the top of that. So that was wrong. And then a lot of them, there's too much of a bright, like OSL red on the base and stuff.
Okay, I mean, so like a lot of your army has this red OSL on the base, or just this guy?
Just that guy. Actually, I have a unit of three of those, and each of them have a different color eye.
Do you like that idea? In retrospect, I'm not saying you shouldn't like it. I'm just curious what your thing's about.
I like it. I don't like the other colors that I chose.
Okay.
I chose a bright teal for one, which doesn't work well.
Mm.
This color is very ominous. The other one is a bright yellow, and I wish it would have been more of a sickly yellow. It's more of a lemon yellow.
Okay.
So I like them being different. One from a gameplay perspective, when I've played with them, which one had been taking damage or which one are you attacking when I had units of one. It's like, I'm attacking the yellow eye, I'm attacking the blue eye.
Oh, okay, nice. There you go.
It's just a small detail and it kind of separates them. I like the red the most. I think it's the most scary. But yeah, so that's that one.
This kind of model and this kind of scheme is the kind that you could definitely like come in with an airbrush like in the middle of the paint process and like add some shading down here.
Yeah.
Like add some shading along like the side of the armor panels up there, and like a little bit of overspray would like not matter and it wouldn't look like anything. Right. You totally could do that.
Could even do it
like a reverse Zenithal with some kind of a thin, interesting, darker ink to add just all over shading.
Oh, yeah. Too. How long do you think this puppy took you to paint?
I don't know. Maybe probably, it was not slow. It was probably 5-6 hours.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bigger model for sure. It's kind of like a vehicle, and it's painted really nicely. You have like verdigris, you have rust, you have like streaking grime. You have three kinds of weathering. It's just right there, you know?
Yeah.
A lot going on.
There's a couple, yeah, just one of those, like, there's a couple of things that I think would punch it up a bit that, yes, if I would redo it now, not being afraid of punching up the brightness, even on something that you are trying to make very dark and dirty or whatever, those touches of contrast go a long ways when you're looking at it on the table.
They really do. And that is a perfect segue into my novitiate kill team here.
Novitiate.
I am really, well, there's magnets. How do they work? I am really happy with the mauve, the burgundy, and the greenish cream.
Yeah.
Like color combo. I like that color combo, I need to punch that model up way more. Like I need, like I would not have minded spending like 4 hours a mini. Well, there is a little bit too many to do that. But I think I need to brighten up that mauve, brighten up that magenta, brighten up that white, and like so much more. Like the whole thing, when I've played Kill Team with it, and I played 3 games now with them, they just feel like they lack contrast like so much, like on the table. Like I was playing against Jay and his cool space goats, and they popped way more than that unit did. Maybe they look good under a microscope, but like on the table, nowhere near enough contrast.
This is the great feedback that I think when the goody peepees are glancing over at their own, you know, squad in progress army that's completed or next kill team they're going to do, that you can apply and to say you can go back, because everything you said, you've already done 90% of the work.
Yeah,
you are just taking it that last 10%, and you don't need to undo anything you've done.
Yes,
I agree. The color scheme is sweet. I love how everything works together.
Thank you.
And it's one of the things we see in GW box art, or we see in the White Dwarf magazines and everything, that we somehow, us as miniature painters, we struggle to make that connection from seeing it and to executing on it, is pushing it further and brighter and feeling okay with doing that, because we think it's not going to make it look too clown car-y or make it look too over the top or lose the work that we've done. Because you get to a point and you're like, gosh, this looks pretty darn good. And you're under your painting light.
Yeah.
And you see the model is now has color on everything. You know the hours you've put in, the blending you've done, the things you've done to execute it. Now, take it out of that light and go throw it on your table under the regular lights in your room, and you'll typically realize, oh, it kind of all kind of melds together.
It's, I can a little see flat. The colors.
But yeah, like you're like exaggerating. We need to exaggerate in miniature painting because they're tiny things,
yeah,
and they're not 2 inches from our face like when we paint them.
Yeah.
So being willing to go over the top, and that may even mean, this is a weird thing that I have not mastered yet and I don't know if I ever will, we need to be okay while we're painting, it looks worse. It will look worse while you're painting, like, it.
Even the entire time while you're painting.
Especially at the very end, we're really punching it up. You're like, oh, before this last punch up, I thought it looked better. It may look better under your painting light 6 inches from your face, but it will look much better with this last step at the gaming table.
Yeah.
Because you're over exaggerating things.
Yes. So some concerns about fixing this army. Mm-hmm. If I punch up all the colors, I need to really make sure that I don't make them all lose a ton of saturation.
Sure.
Right? Because the more bright color you add in, the more desaturated your highlight becomes, sorry, your color becomes. And so I wouldn't want to lose the feeling of magenta, the feeling of mauve. Maybe I would also need to darken down the shading a little bit to kind of get that contrast while not brightening everything up a ton. So that's a consideration. Secondly, that pink effect that I have across the entire army, or no, kill team, could be way crazier. It could be way more saturated. And that would also be one of those kind of cheap effects that we've talked about before in the podcast, mm-hmm, that is kind of like punches your whole unit up from a tabletop viewpoint, because that saturated color just pops so beautifully.
Yeah,
that'd be an easy one to do with like no thought, because mm-hmm. I don't need to add white to that. I just add more fluo pink, and then it just gets crazier and crazier.
Yeah, I think you could also not worry about the saturation so much, just build up highlights more, and then go Samurai Bunny on it and do a glaze over the entire surface of a saturated ink. There you'd boost up your color, you'd boost up the highlights in those, you know, the edges and everything, and you wouldn't have to worry about upholding saturation the whole time.
Yeah, that's definitely, yeah, I mean, I think fluo kind of needs that, honestly. Like, I very often will either have a white undercoat or mix white paint into my initial layers of fluo just to kind of give it that opacity and give it that brightness. And then, like, at the very last 2 to 3 layers, come in with actual fluo paint. Because so often it's just very translucent and it needs a lot of help. But once you give it the adequate, like, support and, like, build up, it's just, like, it's so mind-blowing.
That's why those fluorescents always seem to act so much better under an airbrush than they do in a regular brush.
Yeah.
Because you don't realize how much quicker you're able to put on 3, 5, 10 coats, yeah, as opposed to a brush.
Right.
It's like, move around, move back.
Yep.
In a minute, I've done 4 coats on this thing, right, and now it's built up. The problem is your exactitude. And what I usually do is, like, I have the spread too much, or, yeah, like, or I'm getting too much fluo in the dark areas around it.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's tricky. It's like also, because like it's one of those things you don't notice is happening until it's like a little bit too late. Or like sometimes I don't even know. I'm like, is my airbrush pointing at the thing I want to keep pointed at? And I like do a couple of test spritzes and I like look around the model.
Nope. You
like,
can't find the spot.
I can't see it. It's like, oh, there's the glossy spot. Shit, move over like to the left, like, yeah, 1 millimeter. And then,
oh, it's way off.
Yeah, and then you can see like this like little fuzzy, like hot pink circle like somewhere in someone's armpit. And it's like, damn it, I missed.
Dude, prime story example of this is freaking Vinci Con a couple of years ago when we were doing the pie wedge one. And yeah, I had the weird robot. And I went in and I'm like, this thing is so desaturated. It's not like I'm not building up interesting colors. I go into Vince's office and bust out his airbrush in the fluo pink. And I'm like, I don't know if I didn't put a painting light under me or whatever. And I was like, okay, yeah, this,
I love this story.
This is like, okay, I got a lot more color interest here now. And it's kind of melded all together, the brushwork I've done. And I walk out into the room with the bright lights, and the thing is just like a fucking ball of pink sun, and it's completely blown out. And I sit down, and all of you look at me, and you look at the model, and I think Vince made some kind of comment where he's like, well, you fucked it up.
You looked so sad. You were like, oh, man. Like, you were painting that thing for so long, like, building up micro textures, and then you just go in there and blast it with fucking pink paint.
I don't know. I was like, I don't know if I was in a fucking closet or something. I couldn't see it all when I was painting.
We all just blame Vince's airbrush setup because it is the jankiest setup ever. It's so dirty.
Yeah. Well, he doesn't have a painting light over it either.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to continue to fall back on it's Vince's fault. I fucked up like 15 hours of work.
Yeah, it was
in a matter of 30 seconds.
It was brutal, but it was hilarious, and it's a funny story.
But it's also a good learning opportunity to where do you go from here? You don't throw the model away.
Oh.
I had like a day and a half. I need to fix this fucker.
It's a paint jam, and we all have to finish the model. That's why you don't throw it away.
Yep.
But let me know if it wasn't a paint jam and you're in your basement, does that model get painted?
Oh, God. If there was no other reason to do it other than, like, I was painting it for fun. If I was doing it for a video, of course I'm fucking finishing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then that's the whole process of the video.
Right. Yeah, that's the learning lesson.
That's the learning lesson of the video. But, like, if it's, like, the bunny where I'm just painting, let's say I was painting that bunny for fun on my own.
Yeah.
It's fucking gone. Gandhi. I'm starting at the 3D printer and printing another one right now.
Yeah. All right, I learned my lesson. Next one.
All right, so is that all three of yours?
That's all three of me.
Okay, so I'm going to do my last two really quickly. The first one is my zombie from my 120 zombies that I painted 120 zombies, I think.
Incredible.
And for the time and the amount that I painted them, I'm very happy with them. They are kind of rough because there's a lot of dry brushing and stuff, but I think the thing that sold it that I'm proud of is going really bright in the skin and then putting that nasty black blood on them. And that just like makes it you know, stand out. It's shiny. You can actually kind of see it at a distance. They're not really well-defined, but I don't know how the fuck you're going to paint 120 zombies well-defined. I painted, how many? Was there like 9, 11, 13 zombies on my diorama that I painted to a high standard? I wouldn't paint, obviously, to that standard, but like, they're very fun models of paint, but I can't be asked to do that and hold actually on. Play a game with them.
If you hold this model and just looking at it right now, you can see its nose, you can see its brow, you can see its eye socket, you can see its upper cheek, right? And you're like, I don't know, 4 feet, 3 feet and a half away. I think this is exactly how you want to paint zombies. And I think a unit of 20 of these would look amazing. Unit of 120. Yeah, I see. This is exactly how I would paint them.
And I should have brought a couple, but the one thing that I did different was that, like, there's like 6 or 8 different skin tones across the whole army.
Yeah.
They're all like slightly tinted. Some are a little bit too cartoony. There was like the purple was like a little bit too purple, but overall, it created some nice differentiation too. They didn't all feel like they painted the exact same way.
Okay.
And it was mostly like one wash step or something or oil wash step that I did, over all the skin that made them different. So,
okay.
But we're going to,
it wasn't like a contrast paint or a speed paint, something like that.
It was oil wash.
Okay.
A thinned oil wash. Cause that way I could put it over all of them and then go back through with Q-tips and then just remove it off the top and get that real bright, almost white, off white back.
Okay.
And then my last one, which is the army scheme I'm most proud of.
The first one.
The first one.
The first one he's painted.
Yeah. It was one of the probably video 5 or 6 or something like that in my history of my channel, which is Boner Boys. And it's very simple because they have so much bone, but it was spray paint the whole fucking model bone color, use the enamels and oil washes, remove it to keep that real light color. The things that I think I would do differently is the armor color fades in there pretty harsh. Like I wish an extra step is going through with real nice edge highlight, shink, shink, shink across those armor panels. I think that alone. What?
You did that kind of.
I did that. I don't think I did it well enough.
Well, it's not that you did an edge highlight. You like washed the recesses with turquoise.
Yes.
And that's not an edge highlight, but it kind of does the same thing.
Yeah, I think the edges aren't as well defined, and there's really not a ton of that across the whole army. I think it pops it because the rest of it pops pretty well. I like the cloth. I think the cloth turned out pretty well. Again, that could maybe have another little thing, but it's those final steps are the steps that you're deciding how much time you want to put in, and those are the things that you do at the very end. So if you have time to do those or don't, how much?
So. I'm so jealous of you because like. Painting horses is such a fucking chore, but like
just bone, baby.
It's a bone, baby.
Just bonered.
Lame.
Yeah, and then I got 2 giant catapults painted in that scheme. I love the fucking catapults.
Yeah,
there's doing the big monsters when most of the shit is bone. Yeah, you know, it's like anything that is easy when it's mostly one color.
It's Necrons. It's fantasy Necrons.
It's Fecrons.
Fecrons.
You know,
fecrons.
It's the same reason why people really like painting night haunts too.
Yeah.
Because you have a majority of the models as one kind of a surface, it allows you more freedom to really like how do you maximize or differentiate your way of doing that surface. And because it's 3 steps, 5 steps, or whatever, because it's the majority of the surface, like you're rewarded for that.
Yeah, and you're also trying to get like an effect that you can see across the entire model. Yeah. Like you're like if you look at from like the top of the like the horse's or the mount's head to down below, you can see that transition happens over the model, and that's like one of the things you can do when you have like a monocolor type army is you can see that very well. And you can do that too when the model is broken up with more colors. It's just less obvious, but with one color, it's more obvious, so you can lean into it harder. All right. I think those are all the armies / war bands that we have painted and how we would change them. But let's toss the question over to the people. What armies, work in progress projects that you guys have that you've learned lessons from? Share them in the TUP Facebook group.
The where?
The FUP. The TUP Facebook group. Share it there and we can all learn together. That's what I wanted to say. God damn it.
Yeah. If you've had, sometimes sharing your you know, I don't want to call them failures, but things you've learned from, things that you look back on and you thought you could do better, you can help other people learn as well. So like, maybe you did a before and after. If you have pictures, we'd love to see those and be like, I was not really happy with this. Here's what it looked like for that. And then here's what I'm going to do next. Or here's what I did do. Also, if you're like, here's the first squad or my army is done and I feel like it's missing something, or I don't really like something, but I don't know what it is. Facebook group is a great place to share that and ask for feedback and support, because I mean, I am shocked for the size of our group, how nice people are and helpful and give good feedback. And it's not just nice feedback. It's also like actionable feedback.
Nice.
So
that's good.
You know, every other miniature painting Facebook group, yeah,
they all suck
compared to ours.
PMP. Oh my God. You know that Vince guy?
Heavier metal.
Ugh.
F that noise.
F it.
Yeah.
Feck that noise. Feckron that noise.
Feckron them in the... Well...
Out of the news!
We have newsy news. I haven't looked at it yet, so Scott, please go first.
10th edition 40K is upon us, and our benevolent Lord GW has distributed the core rules of Space Marine Tyranid Leviathan specific data sheets available now for download. That was all one word. I didn't, you know, like, if there was no spaces, that's how I was speaking. Okay, cool. Data sheets are cool. People are getting excited. I popped into a Hellstorm little YouTube stream, and they're talking about the new edition. Gave them a fiver, and I was like, I love Space Marines. And then I fucking dipped.
That's how you do. Just mic drop, get the fuck out of there.
Take some money. All right, I'm gone. Yeah,
so on you.
It's cool. I just played my 2K point of my Escalation League, so I guess I'm done with Age of Sigmar now, at least for that, with that league. And people in the chat at the end of the game were like, are you going to do an Escalation League for 40K? And I was like, huh, maybe. Hey, 10th edition came out.
You want the Space Marine half of my Leviathan box?
No, I said I'm never going to pay to Space Marine again, and I'm fucking sticking to it. No, I'm going with Deldar for sure. But it's all coming together, because I got a scheme that I'm interested in painting. I got a buddy who wants to play Boarding Patrol. He wants to play that. 10th edition just came out. People are interested in maybe a 40K escalation campaign, so maybe we'll make it happen, maybe not. Yeah, I would love to give it a shot, look at it. I haven't played 40K since 6th edition, so it's been a long time.
It's a long time. All signs point to it being an improvement, because they've Age of Sigmarified it. So that's good. Yeah, I'm kind of excited. I like sci-fi stuff doesn't excite me as much as fantasy stuff, but like the right sci-fi thing. The bummer thing is, well, I mean, the plus thing is I have a full army.
Yeah.
My Night Lords.
Yeah.
I've never played a game with them.
Ready to go.
Yeah, but they're ugly. And so I would I would not be happy. Like,
really? You wouldn't?
You know, also, it would, the list that I built there, it was a fucking meta list. I had some hardcores come at me and they're like, here's what fucking rocks about Night Lords. And I'm like, give me three of everything.
I'll take three.
So they're probably all going to suck in fucking 10th edition, all the shit.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe it's a video idea, how to fix my shitty painted army.
Battlescribe may not get a 10th edition update. The developer and the data team are separate. And the data team claims the dev hasn't spoken to them in 3 years. The data team and also the YouTuber Hobby Knight are calling for people to cancel their Battlescribe subscription. A little bit of drama llama.
Yeah, dude, if they're just fucking just absorbing the free money and haven't done anything with it for 3 years.
Yeah, if like they're not, yeah, if the devs are getting the money and then they're, but they're not like actually filling out all the data, which is kind of the important part, honestly.
Yeah.
Seems like, I know nothing about this.
Okay. This is new news to me that they haven't done shit and they don't have any plans for it. But if I'm being honest with you, I am fine with Battlescribe going away, because it's such a messy, terrible UI, ugly ass 1998 version of this kind of a thing experience. I hate it so much. I want, but also I say that because you could see how great it could be for GW to do their own, a nice, smooth, streamlined, easy user experience, step-by-step process of doing it through an app. Ideally freaking free. But like, or a third party, like just does it all right. Because the reason why Battlescribe existed, because there's nothing else. And it's such a shitty version of what it could be.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's definitely like has a lot going on in the user interface. It exposes a lot of control to you all at once. And that just feels like it's cluttered and like very challenging to use.
And that like the final product that you get of your thing is such an ugly mess. And I can't like print that out or have it saved on my phone and feel like I can move smoothly through a game with what they give you. I say I've used Battlescribe. All of my 40K stuff was all used Battlescribe because it was an option and it allowed me to build things and build my list and feel confident that I was doing it right within the rules. I'm not shitting on it. I'm just saying the user experience is not what I want it to be. So I hope they either get their shit together and they remake it or make it.
Or they'll fall apart.
Or fall apart and we get another option. Maybe that's the gap in the market that allows somebody else to rise up with something better.
Okay. What else we got here? I feel bad that I keep taking all the the talking points here.
Nope.
Privateer Press to stop producing legacy models for Warma Hordes as well as Riot Quest.
Oh, shit.
This change comes as a change to their manufacturing process. I don't know if I told you about this. I must have mentioned this. I bought some P3 models at Adepticon, and they are going for a 3D printed manufacturing process. But if I'm being quite honest, they were not super high quality prints.
Yikes on bikes, dude.
Yeah, and I also feel like, okay, I don't know what the expectations should be, but if I buy a 3D printed figure, I feel like it should come cleaned and all the printing stubs shouldn't be super visible.
100%.
It definitely is not the case.
See, that's not okay because I can do that at home myself.
Honestly, if they just gave me the STL for the models I bought, I could have printed a much higher quality version of the model. Maybe not much higher quality, but at least a little bit higher quality. And I wouldn't have had to have paid like plastic mold injection prices
right
for the fucking model.
Right. Yeah, because we're in this weird spot where if that's the product they're giving us, but they're still charging us for the antiquated technology that was much more, you know, of a cost sink for the company to produce. It just kind of like they're trying to pull the wool over the consumer's eyes, but many of the consumers understand 3D printing and the cost of 3D printing and doing it yourself.
Yeah.
It's just like, no, you don't have the magic that you're using, like the mysterious GW process. Like, it's not what you're doing. Yeah. I know how this is done. I know how this is 3 cents in resin, right? Like, come on now.
Yeah, like if it was like a super high quality print and then you wouldn't need to deal with that as someone who doesn't want to deal with 3D printing and is all cleaned up and super nice, and you know, I would kind of pay for that. I'd be fine paying for that. But yeah, it just wasn't a convincing experience. Again, I only bought two models, so I can't like just like shit on the whole thing, but I wasn't super encouraged.
Yeah, it's like that's why I like where like CEOcast is. If CEOcast done to like a high quality, it doesn't have those nubs, those print lines.
I kind of want to get one for you to look at.
Okay, go get it.
Because I kind of want to know what you think. Okay. Entertain the people.
I'm gonna talk about a news topic now. The news topic I'm going to talk about is Gloomhaven 2nd Edition has been announced, which will include a full rewrite, balancing, and newly designed miniatures. There will not be a conversion box to upgrade existing boxes from 1E to 2E, and the creator, Isaac, says that the changes will run deep. Now, this is also exciting because part of this Kickstarter, they're launching all these minis for Gloomhaven
and 500
Frosthaven. Yeah.
Plus models.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Somebody on this podcast might be doing a video painting those. Not all of them.
I'm not painting any of them, but I am running an ad for them, which is why I know about the amount of models.
I'm running an ad for them, too, and I'm painting up some of the ones there because I want to do a board game painting stuff, and they sent them to me. they were way better quality than I thought they were going to
be. Yeah, yeah, they're not. They're very paintable.
They're hard plastic, not bendy, and pretty darn crisp. Okay, so this is, who, remind me of the company this comes from?
This is P3. This is their 3D printed manufactured model. And I wish I hadn't said anything about it. I definitely kind of colored your opinion a little bit.
You colored it gray.
I just remember not being, and I haven't looked at that model in like 2 months. I just remember kind of being like, yeah, it's a little bit sad. All right, while he analyzes that, I will go on with the next news point here. Steamforged Games is partnering with Kickstarter, and the partnership is basically Steamforged is going to make their next 4 games on Kickstarter exclusively. And they don't, I mean, I haven't read the article, but I would imagine that they don't go into the details of how this is necessarily benefiting both parties. Maybe they do a little bit, but obviously Steamforged makes huge board games for big IPs like Dark Souls, Monster Hunter, Resident Evil, all this stuff. And that attracts a lot of people to these big IPs. And so obviously Kickstarter wants to have them on the platform because it draws people to the platform. But I would imagine the benefit for Steamforged is that Kickstarter has given them a better cut. So you normally have to pay credit card fees and also a 7% cut to Kickstarter for your campaign. Maybe for Steamforged, it's like a 2% or a 3%, or they don't have to pay credit card fees or whatever it is. Who knows? Maybe that's the benefit going on here. But again, I have not read the article.
I broke it.
Did you actually?
This little piece of her hilt of her sword just came off.
Yeah, that's, I mean, okay.
Like, I didn't, like, I wasn't, like, snapping it or accidentally.
I hate you.
It's all my fault. Okay, so my initial,
let me see it again.
Unsolicited feedback on this model. It is solid. It is.
I know.
It's a nice sculpt. It is well designed. It's crisp. It's a good 3D print. I'm going to put the little piece I broke off back in the bag.
Look at that. Like, I mean, if you saw this concept, wouldn't you kind of be vibing with that? Yes. I saw that and I was like, fuck yeah, I want to buy this model.
Yeah, she's solid. One of the things that I think is a downside of there is I actually think if they do a more opaque, darker resin, it would sell it better. I feel like the lighter, and that's like just slightly translucent almost. I don't know, it's not translucent, but like you lose some of that. Now, that said, there is the tiny supports around her face, around the hair and stuff that have not been cleaned off. However,
there's a failed print line too that runs across the entire.
Yeah, that bothers me. The little bits of the supports that are there, because probably 95% of the supports have been taken off of it. I think of that as like, instead of having to clean mold lines and whatever, if you factor that in to your new model kind of process. So that doesn't bother me. The little nubbins that you get from those things, from 3D prints, is the massive downside. And by and large, I can't see many of those.
I don't necessarily care about that so much. Well, that is annoying. But like also the detail of the model, I feel like is not as nice as I would have hoped. Especially the face. Like I feel like the nose and the lips are not like very defined. And I feel like after a layer of paint, after some primer.
That's hard to tell. It's hard to tell with that light gray. I can't really tell. It's kind of like when you get a metal, old school white metal model. The face could look great. It could look like jank. You honestly can't really tell until you start putting some paint on it. Yeah, it's not the highest quality 3D printing. Like, it's not as high as the Kingdom Death stuff.
So
that they 3D print and set.
Would you be happy paying $20 for that?
No.
$15?
Somewhere in the $10 to $15.
Okay.
I think is probably fair.
I can't remember what it cost. I can't remember if it was 10 to 15. I can't remember if it was 15 to 20. I can't remember if it was a little bit higher than that.
Yeah. I mean, and it's obviously brittle because that thing just flaked off.
I know.
Snapped off.
That's the other thing. It's a wargaming figure. If you're a wargaming company, you should be printing in a resin that's like flexible and resistant to some kind of damage, because that it definitely exists out there.
Yeah. That's another kind of... Oh, I'll give you this back. I don't know what I'm doing here. You take all your shit.
Put the card in the bud.
I don't know. I thought I was being helpful. I was not being helpful. That is one, like, another of the bonuses to, like, the CO-Cast stuff is that, like, when I got some of the CO-Cast models from CreatureCaster, and they're, like, they're extremely durable, and I took them out into my driveway and I threw them up 30 feet in the air and they fell on my blacktop and my cement and they didn't break. And so I'm like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
You can't complain with that. And they're crisp and whatever. Like, same with the broken animal ones. They're just like, damn, this is kind of the nice middle ground of crisp detail and really durable in terms of breakings.
Yeah.
So,
Again, I only bought two models. I don't want to condemn the company. I'm not trying to do that, but
how much was she?
I can't remember. I can't remember if it was 15 or if it was 20 or if it was more. But yeah, I liked the model and I liked that new faction that they showed off in War Machine. So I kind of wanted to pick it up, but then I bought this. I was kind of like, meh. But I will say that when I opened it on stream, some of my viewers were a little bit more lenient with it. So maybe my expectations are too high. I don't know. All right, what's the next news item?
I don't really have anything else. Okay, night models. We talk a lot about night models for how kind of moderately niche they are. Night models unveils its newest game called Harry Potter, Catch the Snitch.
Oh, a Quidditch game.
And the core box is priced at £140. I mean, US dollars. It will have 33 miniatures, 4 complete teams for all 4 houses. I thought it said, and all 4 horses. I'm like, horses? Where's the horses in Harry Potter? A game board, cards, tokens, custom dice, and more. Now, if this is like a board game in a box kind of a thing, that doesn't really excite me. But if it's like if it's fucking Quidditch Guild Ball, dude.
Oh, man. I forgot a preamble ramble topic. But yeah, I have a weird fascination with sports miniature war games for some reason, being someone who doesn't play sports at all.
Yeah, I don't like those
at all. Or watch them, really.
I don't get the connection of whatever, because you know what the initial, like in the history of man, what the initial sport was? It was war. That is the sport. Sport is with the price of the defeater is death. Like, that is sports. That's why, like, mixed martial arts is a sport, you know?
I always love
the sports.
I always love Cro-Magnon man time with you. Like, dude, we talk about, like, humanity's, like, roots and shit.
Dude, let's talk about Muay Thai, okay?
Yeah. You seen a movie called Ong Bak?
Ong Bak. I have, dude.
That movie is amazing.
That dude, that's a deep cut. That's old shit.
I know, it's good though.
That's great. It's more than good. It's fucking great. Okay. All right.
No, we're not gonna talk about Cro-Magnon Man.
Have you seen a movie called Bloodsport, bro?
No, I have not. I've heard of it though.
Dude, you need to watch some OG Bloodsport, my friend.
Wait, like the one from like the 60s or 70s or something like that?
No, it's 80s.
Bloodsport. Okay, never mind. I think it's something else.
Dude, some fucking Van Damme, bro.
Dude.
Oh man. Lionheart? Watch some Lionheart, some OG Van Damme in this.
This is one of my weak areas, okay? Don't judge me. I haven't seen this.
Dude, 80s action movies is the pinnacle of action movies.
There are some fucking great ones.
Yeah, so.
Very true.
Anyway, when men were coming out of the caves and they were scared of giant cats, you know, the sport of hunting was to keep your family safe and to feed them, and to lose in the sport would mean the cat ate your fucking skull. So I don't need a football attached to it, because football is just trying to replicate a slightly safer version of what war was if you push back our lines and you get to the goal zone, which is, you know, our village, then we lose and we do the same. We push you back to your goal line and you like keep the Mongols at bay. You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying. Do you in another life, are you a social studies teacher?
No. No, I don't know. I don't know.
What's the subject in school where like you're talking about like prehistoric man? What's that called? It's not social.
Anthropology?
Stuff. Anthropology, yeah.
Dude, I took two anthropology classes in college.
Yeah, I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
You're a fucking genius.
Dude, but most of them were just looking at, like, skulls of evolution from ape to man.
Yeah.
I took a whole class on evolution, and you had to know, based on a picture of a skull, what the actual name of that primate was and where it fit on the chain. And you had to know the nickname of it, because they were all given names of like, this was Sally, and Sally is like...
Like the discovery of this thing has a name.
Yeah, they named the skull as to be this version of it. Anyway, that right, was...
Next episode, I'm going to pop quiz you on some fucking primate skulls and see if you still know that stuff.
Oh, God, it's got to be buried deep.
It's buried deep. All right, Infinity N4 rules have been updated to version 2.0, so if you're an Infinity gamer... Got some fresh new rules for you available for free on their website, because Infinity knows how to do it. Shout out to Corvus Belli.
Yeah, Infinity is a sports war game skirmish game where the sport is shooting motherfuckers.
Yeah, with fucking sci-fi laser guns.
Yeah, dude, and fucking laser beam samurai robots. Fucking great.
It is great.
I mean, every time we go to Adepticon and we walk by that booth and you see their sweet-ass fucking...
It's always the coolest.
Neo Tokyo terrain, yeah. I'm like... Fuck yeah, I want to play this shit.
It's always so cool.
And I never do.
You never do. You buy the models.
Dude, I bought a whole starter kit of fucking Ninja Samurai dudes, and then I painted one with speed paints on your channel, or your Twitch stream, and I fucking hated it, and I was so embarrassed by it that I haven't painted any more since.
We appreciate the honesty. Renegade Game Studios. Wow,
dude, how many times do they need to put Renegade in the name of their company?
I don't know, but they really want you to know. They're bringing back HeroScape. Were you ever a HeroScape player?
No, that was still a thing in like our local Austin, Minnesota convention. They have a big HeroScape like game event thing that goes on, because it's all them little hexes.
Yeah,
and they like build up the terrain.
Yes. Yes.
It's like Warhammer meets Minecraft.
Yeah, it has a Lego like quality to it, right? Yeah. I can't remember exactly what it is. But that's cool. I know a lot of people that like HeroScape, and I would be very excited to hear that. They teamed up with Hasbro. I'm not sure, is Hasbro like, they did some sussy stuff with that one dungeon crawling game. Wait, hold on. Wait, is this HeroScape? Wait,
what are you talking about?
This game's already wait, hold on. What's the dungeon crawling game that's like classic?
HeroQuest.
Is it HeroQuest? And it's got like that big like Conan looking barbarian on the front. Yeah. Okay, didn't Hasbro do HeroQuest and kind of like fuck it all up?
Hey.
Or is that someone else that did HeroQuest?
Right. Well, because OG HeroQuest was owned by Milton Bradley, but I think like most of the toys and game companies are gone. From the 70s and 80s, and Hasbro like just eats up, and it's kind of a monopoly on a bunch of Disney shit.
It's a Disney of toy brands.
Yeah, and so they own, you know, Wizards of the Coast, and they own a bunch of other IPs and big toy shit.
Okay. All right, lastly on the news, we have James's Kickstarter Corner. He has this this thing called Modu Bases by Warscape, a set of 3D printable bases with snap fit core to easily change the size and or shape of the miniatures bases so they can easily be used in games that require different sizes. Oh, okay, so you put the model on some core and then you can change out what size base it's on. I'm trying to think when I would really want to do that, and like the only thing I can think of is like using fantasy models for Age of Sigmar and vice versa. That's a very specific use case.
Yeah, it's one of those where it's like, I don't know if they changed the base size on you, but then you had to like preemptively like put the model in that certain kind of base, thinking it might have been changed.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Seems a little weird.
There's probably some pretty logical things in the Kickstarter. We'll explain it all. So we'll put a link down and you can do the reading so we don't have to.
Yeah, there it is. And that's it with the news. Welcome to the end of the podcast. Thank you for sticking around all the way into the end. We appreciate it. If you guys like our podcast and you want to support it, there are many ways you can do it. Some non-free ways are you can buy our merch on our Teespring. You can find that link down in the show notes and description below, depending on where you're listening. We have a bunch of fun merch, a couple different t-shirts designs, hoodies, joggers, coffee mugs, all kinds of fun stuff. If you like the show so much you want to hear us talk more, which is crazy. We have an extended version of our podcast available to our $5 patrons, where we talk about things like models from other people that we enjoy, are inspired by, new things we've tried out and failed with, like me, or experimented with. And we also give feedback to one of our patrons. So as a patron, you can supply a model for us to give feedback to, and you can also suggest topics for episodes. This one was a user-submitted topic for an episode, and we like to credit the users when they do that as well. So $5 a month to get access to about maybe 20 to 30 extra minutes of content for the podcast. Mm-hmm. Other non-free ways, you can watch this show whitelisted with a browser add-on to watch our ads every 30 minutes. You can also tell your nerd friends about our podcast, share us around, give us a review on wherever you listen to podcasts. Those are all great ways to support the show, and we appreciate any kind of support, guys.
Yeah, that was it. Also, bonus thing.
Bonus.
If you supply us with a mini for critique, and we're probably going to have to start doing this for people that supply it for our topics, we make fun of your name.
Yeah.
And come up with a new nickname for you.
So if you want to get roasted about something you had no control over, you should give us some of your money.
So yeah, we talked about Keith in the after party today, and his new nickname is Keith Bacciolo, the ball pit lord.
The dark ball pit lord.
Yeah. So if you want to be the next ball pit lord, give us money.
Yeah. Yep.
And while you think that over, over the next fortnight, that is how much time will pass until we have the next episode of the podcast. Until then, we'll catch you on the
flippity flop.